Welcome to Iris for Sunday, June 20th, 2021. My name is Trevor, and I will be bringing you the Sunday Sioux City Journal today. Let's take a quick look at the weather forecast for the next 5 days for the Sioux City area. Today, we can expect a thunderstorm with windy weather in the afternoon. Winds will be about 8 to 16 miles per hour, and we're looking at a high of 83 degrees today. Tonight, it'll be breezy, early, partly cloudy in the evening. We're looking at a low of 55. Monday, it'll be cooler with sun and clouds. We're looking at a high of 73 and a low of 51. Tuesday, be nice with partial sunshine, high of 79, low of 60. Wednesday, it'll be warmer, severe thunderstorms at night, high of 90, low of 69. And Thursday, mostly cloudy and very warm. Looking at a high of 94 and a low of 65. So it looks like we're in for some cooler weather, thankfully, but also some big temperature swings, and low is 51 degrees tomorrow night. So that's quite the change for summer. Now, as we turn to the front page of today's Sunday Sioux City Journal, we'll take a look at the mini editorial at the bottom of the page. This comes from Bonnie Ide Selkin of Sioux City. And she writes, "What is worse for our national security, open borders or doing nothing about it?" End quotation. That comes from Bonnie Ide-Selkin of Sioux City. All right, let's go to the front page story. Happy Father's Day. And it shows a picture of two Sioux City Fire Rescue firefighters. It's a father-daughter pair, and apparently the first one in Sioux City Fire Rescue's history. And same time, headline, "Keeping it in the family." Subheadline, "Sioux City Fire Department has its first father-daughter members." From Sioux City, Travis and Kylie Lang are the first father and daughter on the first on the Sioux City Fire Rescue. In 133 years, there have been fathers and sons, brothers, married couples, and cousins, but never a father and daughter. Quote, "Every parent wants their child to find a career that is fulfilling," Travis said. For Kylie, her perfect career led her to follow in her father's footsteps and become a Sioux City firefighter. Travis didn't want to be a firefighter when he was a child. He didn't dream of big red fire trucks or sliding down a fire pole. He grew up in Hinton on a family farm. After volunteering for the fire department for 11 years, Travis was encouraged to apply for a full-time position by friends in the department. He has now worked for the department for 18 years. His only regret was not starting sooner. Kylie was 9 when he joined the department. There were moments growing up when she would wonder what he was up to or worry that she hadn't heard from him for a while. As she got older, she learned a little more about his work, quote, "but some things you leave at work." When she graduated high school, she enlisted in the Missouri National Guard. In 2018, she attended Northwest Missouri State University for criminology. She always wanted to help people, but she wasn't sure what she wanted to do for a career. After having a conversation with her dad, she decided to apply for Sioux City Fire Rescue. Knowing his daughter, he thought the way she enjoys helping people and thrives in a structured environment made a perfect fit for the fire department. In fall of 2018, she applied. When she started her EMT class, she realized she found the perfect job. Quote, "when I got here, it was meant to be," she said. On April 27, 2020, she received an offer letter. She is the fifth female firefighter in Sioux City history. At the time, she knew she was scheduled for deployment in Kuwait for a year. Instead of putting off training until she returned, Kylie jumped in and started orientation. She finished orientation and left May 25th of 2020. She returned 2 weeks ago. On June 9th, she started her first shift. Both Langs have a desire to serve people and help the community. The job gives them opportunity to help people in a time of need. Whether it's their worst day or just a bad day, the Langs want to be there to help. Kylie loves interacting with the community. Even when the situations are bad, she knows she is helping someone and making a situation better. Quote, "everybody needs somebody sometime, and if I can be that person or she can be that person, it makes life worth living," Travis said. "It's just who we are." A unique pair, a unique opportunity for the pair is the ability to talk through tragic scenarios and process grief. Through Travis's years in the department, he has seen a variety of tragedies and will now be able to help Kylie when she needs it. Quote, she'll know that I've been there, I've done it, I've seen it, and she can come talk to me, he said. Travis said the department encourages peer support. Many times, the situations cannot be discussed with family members because of HIPAA laws. After a tragic event, he said the firefighters will sit down together and talk through the incident. It makes the department even more like a family. Originally, Travis and Kylie were going to be on the same shift, but because of her deployment, she is now on the opposite shift. Holidays and weekends are not off days for a firefighter. While the days may not occur like normal families, the pair said they always make it work. Whether it's opening Christmas presents at 6 a.m. before Dad leaves for work, or celebrating a holiday a day late, the family finds a way. For Father's Day, father and daughter both have the day off. Quote, we're going to grill out, Kylie said. So that's a story from the Sioux City Fire Rescue. All right, let's return back to the front page for local Siouxland news. And we see a headline, Tourism Group Hires Director from Sioux City. The newly formed Sioux City Regional Convention and Visitors Bureau is seeking an executive director to lead and manage daily operations. Tim Savona, Spectra General Manager and an SCRCV board member, said the Bureau is looking to grow. From the get-go, he said the hope was for the Regional Convention Bureau to have three employees in its early stages. He said the executive director will be running the whole operation. Quote, a lot of convention visitor bureaus, depending on your city or your town, have anywhere from 2 to 3 to 15 employees, Savona said. It's kind of like a chamber. You start with one or two and then you grow and grow and you grow. That's where we're at. In late January, the bureau announced its first hire, Ron Bauer, who was recruited from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, to serve as destination manager for tourism. Savona said Bauer remains in that position. The Convention Visitors Bureau focuses on bringing in new events and promoting Sioux City as a destination for tourists, conventions, and sporting events. Local leaders refocused their tourism efforts after Sioux City eliminated the city department that oversaw not only tourism, but also the Tyson Event Center and the Convention Center. The change occurred after the city hired Spectra, a Philadelphia-based venue management firm, to run the Tyson 3 years ago. The Convention and Visitor Bureau Board manages the new CVB, while the Events Facilities Advisory Board continues to oversee the city-owned venues. Bauer's job description consisted of prospecting new business opportunities through strategic marketing efforts, enhancing visitor traffic to the area, and serving as a voice between potential visitors and the industries that host them. Quote, you can't just hire three overnight, so we started with one to get some roots planted, to build the infrastructure, if you will, to get an updated website, to get an office established with email and phones, to get some collateral created. Flyers, activation opportunities at different events, Savona said. Now, we're looking to add another position that would help carry it forward. We'll see how that goes, and then hopefully we can add a third in time. The Visitors Bureau has established several partnerships within the region, including the cities of Sioux City, North Sioux City, and Sergeant Bluff. Savona said hotel membership is at roughly 15%, and the Bureau is still working on signing up more. He said a new website for the Visitors Bureau is expected to launch next week. Quote, we've activated at a number of events around town. When we had volleyball in February, when we had the NAIA events up at the United Sports Academy and the Arena Sport Academy, we have activations in place. So we have a table that's set out with lots of different collateral about the city, he said. A lot of people come to town and they say, what do I do? What do I eat? That's kind of a resource we want to provide. While you're here, here's the various things you can do. Behind the scenes, Savona said the Visitors Bureau is providing assistance and assistance to a lot of clients and has also bid on a handful of events. He said two new events are coming to town. One will be held at the Stony Creek Inn, while the other will take place at the Riverside Plaza Hotel. Quote, we've signed up for and are building out a software that is utilized to bid on events, he said. These things all take time to unroll. We've only been at it for about 5 months, so the progress has been fantastic. Last August, the Sioux City Council unanimously approved a memorandum of understanding to authorize quarter 20, quarterly 25,000 contributions to the Visitors Bureau for 1 year. Under the proposal, which was first pitched to the council last July, member hotels in Sioux City, South Sioux City, North Sioux City, and Dakota Dunes will levy a 1% fee per room to finance the Visitors Bureau. The Visitors Bureau will recommend visitors stay at properties that voluntarily collect the fee. The fee is in addition to the 7% hotel-motel tax collected on all rooms in Sioux City. Half that 7% tax is currently earmarked for tourism purposes, while the other half goes to the city's general fund. All right, we'll now turn to the inside page of A2 of the Local Nation section of today's paper, where we look to a local review of a musical performance that happened at the Orpheum. Kind of return back to normal as more people are vaccinated from COVID and we can resume normal life. Headline, Lee Bryce throws a welcome back party. Every song was a sing-along song at Lee Bryce's raucous concert Friday night. Celebrating the return of large-scale events, the Orpheum Theater audience gave the country hitmaker a hero's welcome. Taking full advantage, Bryce rolled through a catalog of chart toppers and got plenty of buy-in, no matter what the topic. Heavy on party songs, Bryce's repertoire included a nice blend of blues, soul, and rap. Opener Cameron Marlowe joined him several times, locking in on parking lot party, drinking class, and more beer, were great appetizers able to pave the way for more bounce. The high-energy vibe that Marlowe introduced with an acoustic set that was anything but acoustic never let up. The appreciative crowd stood throughout the night and helped Bryce salute essential workers and military personnel with, quote, I drive your truck. Lighting up the theater with cell phones and no stage lights, they prompted tears when he told the story of a soldier making the ultimate sacrifice. Easily, it was one of the facility's most moving moments pre or post-COVID. Quote, boy, a father's song to his son got the waterworks going, too. Part Garth Brooks, part Toby Keith, Bryce knows just how to pace a concert for maximum effect. He had a good mix of styles and a few stories that helped newcomers understand his journey. Quote, Crazy Girl, a song he wanted to record but needed the money a big-name act could bring, was one of those game-changers. He let the Eli Young Band record it and gave them a big hit. No doubt, his take would have generated a similar reaction. Letting his bandmates enjoy solo turns, he also invited Marlowe to sing his single, Sober as a Drunk, during his set. It, too, fit the narrative. Bryce appeared as glad as the fans to be back in concert seating in a setting. He gave them plenty of reasons to rejoice and enough hits to remind them what they had been missing for more than a year. Marlowe, a former Voice contestant, the name of the show is The Voice, offered several of his releases, including Giving You Up and paid tribute to his idols. He offered his spin on Jamie Johnson's In Color and Travis Tritt's Here's a Quarter, but really scored with a very bluesy Folsom Prison Blues. Together, the two were ideal party hosts, just the welcome back Siouxlanders needed for what looks like a strong summer music season. And speaking of a return to normalcy, here's a short blurb, and there's two pictures about barbecue in Sioux City for the Rib Fest. Hundreds of people milled about Saturday afternoon at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino's Battery Park during Rib Fest. The event, a major fundraiser for Camp High Hopes, attracted hundreds of people and more than two dozen teams competing for barbecue trophies. Then brief stories, kind of sadder situation. A headline, 19-year-old dies in Wayne County rollover. A driver was killed Thursday evening in a rollover in Wayne County, Nebraska. The Wayne County Sheriff's Office was called to a vehicle accident about a mile and a half east of Carroll on 859th Road Thursday evening, according to a statement posted on the Wayne County Sheriff's Office Facebook page. A vehicle driven by Jacob Hurt, 19, lost control, entered a ditch, and rolled. Hurt was ejected from the vehicle and was pronounced dead at the scene, according to the statement. The rollover remains under investigation. The Wayne County Sheriff's Office was assisted by the Carroll Volunteer Fire Department and the Windside Fire Department. All right, as we work our way through the paper, we'll turn to the week in Iowa on page A9. It's a recap of news stories across the state from the past 7 days. So these are just kind of shorter articles. All righty. In the news, guilty plea in Trump rally shooting. A supporter of President Donald Trump pleaded guilty to felony charges for firing his handgun into a car occupied by black women arguing with pro-Trump agitators near the Iowa Capitol last December, injuring one. Michael McKinney, 26, pleaded guilty to intimidation with a dangerous weapon and willful injury, charges that each carry up to 10 years in prison. Under a plea agreement, a prosecutor called generous, the state will dismiss four charges, including attempted murder, and won't seek sentencing enhancements that would require McKinney to serve mandatory minimum of 5 years on each count before becoming eligible for parole. COVID testing. The state of Iowa is ending its coronavirus testing program next month, saying demand has fallen for testing at the state-funded drive-thru and clinic sites. Healthcare providers, pharmacies, and other retail testing sites will continue to offer tests. Business destroyed. Fire destroyed Dobson Pipe Organ Builders in Lake City, a western Iowa business that made pipe organs for churches, schools, and customers from around the world. Firefighters found the building engulfed in flames that caused its exterior walls to collapse. Gambling revenue. Iowa casinos are on track to have their most profitable year ever, with officials crediting pent-up post-pandemic demand among Iowans eager to spend money at entertainment venues as a key factor in the fiscal 2021 revenue surge. Odds and ends. New leader. Iowa House Democrats elected State Representative Jennifer Confist of Windsor Heights to be their new caucus leader, making her the first woman to serve in that capacity. Safe haven. A baby boy born April 23rd was released to Iowa Department of Human Services custody under the state's safe haven procedure, the 48th time since the law was established about 20 years ago. Burning fine. A Northwest Iowa man was ordered to pay an $80,000 fine for burning thousands of railroad ties on his property despite being told it would violate the law. And actually, I know from another article that actually happened here in the Sioux City area. The water cooler. Possible candidate. State Senator Liz Mathis, Democrat of Hiawatha, said she is, quote, seriously considering a bid next year for the congressional seat currently held by Republican U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson. Stepping aside. State Senator Rob Hogg, a Cedar Rapids Democrat, who has been in the Iowa legislature nearly two decades, announced he will not seek re-election in 2022. Supreme Court. U.S. Senator Joni Ernst called it a hypothetical but did not rule out the potential for a Republican-controlled Senate to once again block a Democratic president's U.S. Supreme Court nominee at any point in 2024. Next, Iowan arrested over January 6th Capitol attack. The FBI arrested an Iowa man and his adult son after they discussed on social media their involvement in the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Court records show Daryl Johnson, 50, of St. Ansgar, and 29-year-old Daniel Johnson of Austin, Minnesota, were arrested separately by agents. An FBI affidavit quotes Daniel Johnson as writing, quote, "We stormed Capitol Hill," to a contact on Facebook on January 6th. The two are charged with entering and remaining in a restricted building, disorderly and disruptive conduct, violent entry, and parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building. Tax reform. Governor Kim Reynolds signed into law a package of tax provisions that includes a reduction in the state income tax and tax brackets, and a new method for funding mental health care services across the state. Mental health care advocates and stakeholders were on hand to celebrate the new law. Reynolds sued. The former head of the Iowa Department of Human Services alleges in a lawsuit against Governor Kim Reynolds that he was ousted because he raised concerns that one of her aides was being paid with federal Medicaid money. Tax proposal. Governor Kim Reynolds said all ideas are on the table when it comes to future state tax reductions, including the elimination of the state's income tax that is responsible for nearly half of all state revenue. All right, well, let's now turn to the opinion section, or page A10, where we have some local Siouxland voices, and we also have an editorial from the editorial board. Let's do the editorial board first. All right, this is from the Sioux City Journal. Their opinion, celebrate Iowa tax cuts, be wary of hidden costs, from the Journal editorial board. They write, lower taxes, question mark? We've been hearing that mantra for years, but this year it could actually come true. Thanks to bills signed this week by Governor Kim Reynolds, Iowans could see a decrease in state income taxes from 6.5% to 8.5%. Additionally, funds used for mental health care services will gradually switch from counties to the state, which proponents say will lower local property taxes. When Reynolds signed the mental health funding bill, advocates saw it as a good sign. Peggy Huppert, executive director of Iowa's chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, said the old way of funding was antiquated and, quote, did not encourage collaboration. The new model would relieve stress counties felt when considering property taxes for mental health. And Republicans who control the governor's mansion and the House and Senate said they aren't done cutting taxes. The aim, Reynolds said, is to reduce income tax even further. Other states have eliminated it entirely, which looms as a goal. On the surface, the changes sound great, but there are some snags. For starters, the income tax bill contained a provision that phases out the state's annual backfill payments to cities, counties, and schools, intended to make up for lost revenue when the state cut commercial and industrial property taxes in 2013. According to the Legislative Services Agency, cities across the state will lose $52.4 million, counties will lose $29.6 million, and other governmental taxing authorities will lose $10.4 million. To make up for those shortfalls, cities and counties will either have to reduce services or increase taxes. State Democrats are worried that shifting mental health care services to the state could be subject to the whims of the annual budgeting process. The concern, if Iowa experiences shortfalls or suffers another pandemic, mental health care could be among the first to suffer. While the immediate goal is to look at further income tax reductions, state lawmakers should also consider what disappears and who might be affected. Voters may be charmed by the thought of lower state taxes, but they still could be paying in the end. Celebrate reductions for now, but beware of the hidden fees in the future. Now we can do letters to the editor. First one is titled, Death Brings Back Memories of Sioux City. And the letter writer writes, the recent death of B.J. Thomas brought back a cascade of memories from my 21 years in Sioux City. Thomas was the hit line singer for a benefit for the Cancer Center. When he sang, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head at the Orpheum, the audience went wild with joy. I still have a photo on my desk with Thomas along with the Cancer Center doctors. The Don Imus show at the Convention Center brought a mixed response. Several doctors threatened not to send me patients if I participated. Imus contributed the proceeds of his radio show to the Cancer Center. The money went to keep the center a cutting-edge facility. As far as Imus's racism, I thought that the person without sin should cast the first stone. Long before my time, the Ink Spots performed to an all-white crowd at the Orpheum. The group had to stay in private homes. I could relate because my family lived in a motel along I-29. One of the Ink Spots had a near-fatal heart attack. Fortunately, the doctors and nurses at the Catholic hospital did not see skin color. The Cancer Center was the dream of my partner, Dr. Joe Washburn. He also dreamed of electronic medical systems, which today we take for granted in our medical system in Wisconsin. When I view patient records from across the state, I think of Joe Washburn in Sioux City and their gracious, kind people. Signed, Leon B. McNeely, Dr. McNeely of Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Next letter writer, their letter is titled, On Father's Day, Remember It All Started in a Garden. And they write, it happened in a garden quite a few years ago. An inquiry of existence, a contribution was made, life expanding, two becoming three, awakening to responsibility, raising humanity, and so the story was told. Within the book, it was written. Take a brief moment, contemplate the present and what has passed. The path your steps have walked upon, those hands that offered security, that mentoring voice giving guidance, building a special place called home. Those symbolic walls protected until you decided to go forth, sharing the impressions given, seeking your own personality. In the significance of the day, remember the passage of time and how this journey always brings us back to that beginning in the garden. The story was told, written in a book so many years ago. Past and present become the moment. Your father, my father, our father. To all those who have accepted not only the opportunity of giving life, by providing strength, substance, and sunshine to all the future explorers of tomorrow. Happy Father's Day. Signed, Dan O'Brien, Sioux City. Next letter, and the final one, is titled, Elected Leaders Work for the People, Not Vice Versa. And they write, when I read Rhonda Capron's letter to the editor entitled, City Leaders Committed to Riverfront Development in the June 13th edition of the journal, I could think of only one word. Really? All capital letters? Last I checked, we still live in a democracy. In our system, elected officials work for the people and not vice versa. A taxpaying citizen of Sioux City has every right to question how our tax money is spent. Mr. Youngers only asked questions, legitimate in my opinion, and did not accuse any city leader of anything. I do not like some of the millions of dollars that we invested in things that are not related to city services. Also, I think that the idea that our city leaders are almost perfect is stretching things a bit. Sour grapes, maybe? Signed, Arden Jasper of Sioux City. All right, we'll now turn to the sports section, section B of today's paper. Let's do track and field news. Stars, headline, Stars support Simbasa's journey. K-P's Phelps places 21st in discus. From Sioux City, while Bia Simbasa was running at the U.S. Track and Field Olympic Trials on Friday night, runners from his alma mater were cheering him on. Simbasa, a North High School grad, finished 7th in the 10,000-meter finals with a time of 27 minutes, 59.94 seconds late Friday night in Eugene, Oregon. Simbasa was one of 24 Americans aiming for a spot in the Olympics, which are later this summer in Tokyo. Simbasa came close to clinching one of those spots. Simbasa started out in the back of the pack during the first 5,600 meters, back around the 12th position on average. The Northern University of Oklahoma runner then started to make his kick at the 6,000-meter mark. Simbasa picked up six spots on the 15th lap, and he saw himself in 7th. He then spent the next three laps in 6th place and then dropped down to 9th at the 8,000-meter mark. Simbasa eventually got back up to 5th and hung out there for the next three laps. When the bell rang for the final lap at Hayward Field, Simbasa was in 2nd place. He was one lap away from getting to go to Tokyo. Simbasa's final lap ended up being his fastest on the night, at 59 seconds flat, but there were other runners who had faster kicks. Woody Kinkad of Bowerman Track Club ended up winning the race, and he had the fastest final lap. Kinkad had a final lap of 53.4 seconds. Simbasa finished up in 7th place with a time he hadn't gotten to his track and field season. North Rising senior Will Lohr watched Simbasa run his race Friday night, and it gave him some inspiration that maybe he can run on a stage like that someday. Quote, I think we're able to see what he's able to do, and at one point he was in similar shoes we were in, Lohr said. He happened to go to North, and it just makes the dream of running in high level meets not possible. Bia provides somebody we can rally around, Lohr added. Lohr was a member of the 2019 Class 4A State Cross Country Championship team, as well as a state qualifier at this year's track and field meet. Drake Stadium is a prestigious oval to run on, but there's optimism that he can run at a place like Hayward. Simbasa has been a fan of the North running program and even offered them some advice earlier in the year. Simbasa joined the Stars on a Zoom call before the state cross-country meet, offering them encouragement and advice before the October 2020 meet in Fort Dodge. Quote, it gave us a confidence boost, Lohr said. It was just something that was really cool. It did play a part in toning us down and gave us some confidence. It was cool that he was rooting for us. Lohr admitted there were nerves before and in the first few minutes of the video chat, knowing that he and his teammates were speaking with one of the most successful runners in the program's history. Next part of the article, headline, Phelps places 21st in discus. Kiana Phelps was one of two Iowa girls who threw in the women's discus competition, and she was happy to have been there. She tried to take in the moment for as long as she could, even when the competition ended. Phelps, a Kingsley Pearson High School graduate, placed 21st with a throw of 175 feet and 6 inches. That throw came on her first attempt. She scratched on her second throw, then recorded a throw of 174 to 11 on her final throw in an Oregon uniform. To qualify, Phelps would have needed to throw a throw of 208 feet. Quote, "That's a pretty tall order," Phelps said. "I threw decent. It's hard to throw a PR 3 meets in a row. I was happy to be at the trials. It's definitely the biggest thing I've ever accomplished. It was super cool to have competed with the big dogs." Phelps qualified for the trials by throwing 192.8 last week in a California meet on a last chance. Quote, "It's insane that things had a funny way of working itself out," Phelps said. "In the end, I reached all my goals, which is insane. It's crazy how life works like that." Phelps will never forget how her journey to the trials happened, which included winning 3 regular season outdoor meets, but she missed the cut for the NCAA Division I outdoor meet, hence why she had to find a meet to qualify for the trials. Quote, "There were so many times where I could have given up and hung it up," Phelps said. "If I would have, I would have been so, so close. I never would have known. I was sitting around after regionals, and the mantra that my family always has, if you do your best, that's good enough. They kept telling me that I did everything I possibly could to reach my goals, and that wasn't true. That's when I got crazy and flew by myself to California. It pays off. I am persistent." Phelps edged Clinton native Cindy Laufenberg, who placed 23rd. Her best throw was 172 feet, as she was representing Illinois State. South Dakota's Ethan Bray and Chris Nielsen, who was actually representing Nike, competed in the pole vault, and that ended after the journal's press time. All right, let's now switch to prep baseball, the Kingsley Pearson Panthers. And there's a picture of a baseball player sliding into base just as the baseman is about to catch a ball. Pretty interesting shot. And headline, off to a rolling start. Subheadline, dominant pitching, timely hitting, sparks Panthers start, from Kingsley, Iowa. The Kingsley Pearson High School baseball team has been on fire to start the season. Before Saturday, calling it a hot streak almost didn't seem like enough. After the Panthers' 20-1 Friday night win over River Valley, the team improved to a perfect 17-0 on the year. Against the Wolverines, Kingsley Pearson exploded for 16 runs in the second inning while sending 22 batters to the plate. The Panthers finished with 12 hits, 12 walks, and 17 RBIs, with junior Jackson Howell leading the way with 3 hits and 4 RBIs. The wins have come in droves this year, and even Coach Taylor Doshot admits that he didn't think the team would get off to a start like this. Quote, "No, I didn't," Doshot said. "We have a pretty good conference. The top 4 or 5 teams in our conference, anybody can pretty much beat anybody on any given night. To get through the first half of our conference undefeated was really nice." On Saturday, the Panthers' perfect start finally came to an end as the team lost to Sioux City West 9-6 and Ridgeview 15-14. Aside from Saturday's blemish, though, 2021 has gone about as well as the team could expect, thanks to a deep lineup and a dominant 1-2 punch at the top of the starting rotation. On the mound, Kingsley Pearson is led by sophomore Evan Newman and junior Brandon Cron, both of whom have ERAs and WHIPs that come in below 1.00. Newman has been the program's ace pitcher for the past 2 years, sporting a 0.8 ERA 2 seasons ago as an 8th grader and a mark of 1.66 mark during his freshman year. He currently has a 0.52 ERA and a 0.96 WHIP in 27 innings pitched, with a team-high 30 strikeouts, and is holding opposing hitters to a batting average of .140. Cron comes in close behind with a .091 ERA and a 0.83 WHIP, with opposing batters hitting just .120 against him this season and 26 strikeouts. For any baseball team, one lockdown pitching arm is extremely valuable. But two, that's just pure luxury. Quote, "Evan has been the man for us the last couple of years, and he still probably is," Doshot said. "But Cron is right there, and he is a great number two. To have him in the rotation has been big this year."
Newman has also had success at the plate and has reached base four times Friday night's home shellacking of the Wolverines. He credited off-season workouts and an improved control for bringing his game to a whole new level, along with a hard slider that has given fits to opposing batters. Well, I think confidence is a huge thing as a pitcher, especially, Newman said. If you go out there with no confidence, you aren't going to do good. I like to go out there thinking that I am one of the best. That helps. The rest of the rotation has done pretty good well, too. Going into Saturday, the Panthers ranked fourth in the state in ERA, third in Class 1A behind Newman Catholic and Ankeny Christian. Kingsley Pearson also ranks first in Class 1A in opponent batting average, second in strikeouts, and second in WHIP. The Panthers team ERA before Saturday's tournament was 1.41, with the staff issuing 131 total strikeouts and 49 walks. Quote, even our 3 and 4 guys take a lot of pride in their starts, Doshot said. Quote, they're throwing strikes and keeping us in ball games, and those guys have wins and pretty good ERAs as well. While their pitching has been the driving force in the team's strong start, the Panthers' offense has pulled its weight too. Coming into the weekend, Kingsley Pearson was hitting .366 as a team with a .470 on-base percentage and 74 walks compared to only 53 strikeouts. On the base pass, the Panthers have stolen 63 bases in 67 attempts. Junior Damon Schmid ranks third among the team starters with .554 on-base percentage, is second with 23 hits, and has a team-high 17 stolen bases. According to Schmid, the biggest key has been the team's ability to make contact. The Panthers' 53 team strikeouts is the second fewest in the state, regardless of class. Quote, we just all go up there and we know that if we put the ball in play, good things will happen, Schmidt said. We've been doing that all year and we've been creating a lot of chaos for the fielders by putting the ball in play. That is kind of our philosophy right now. With a pitching staff full of strong arms and a lineup that makes contact with regularity, Doshot's team has put itself in a position to get back to the state tournament for the second consecutive year. Kingsley Pearson has played at the state four times in its history, but has never made it to the finals. At 17-2, the Panthers have as good a shot as anybody in Class 1A. Quote, obviously, that is where we want to be, Doshot said. We've got a lot of work to do to get there, but I think that is one of the goals that we have with this group. Next year, the year after, and the year following, and for the younger guys, that is something they hope to achieve someday. For now, though, the focus is on Monday's game at OABCIG. All right, let's now turn to the business section, section B of today's paper, and this is regarding a business that some of you probably may have patronized over the years. Headline, Hanging It Up After 70 Years, and this is regarding Carol and Al Levine, their dry cleaning shop in South Sioux City. Headline, a subheadline, Couple to Close South Sioux City Dry Cleaning Business. From South Sioux City, Al and Carol Levine are very ready to bid farewell to the summer heat in their non-air-conditioned dry cleaning shop in South Sioux City. After 70 years in business, Levine Cleaners is set to close July 30th. Quote, if not before, said Carol Levine, age 75. The couple would like to retreat to the air conditioning as soon as possible. The hotter it is, every day I have to get up. I just want it to be over, she added. The shop at 2116 Dakota Avenue remains open now for only one reason, so that customers can pick up their dry cleaning and repair clothing before the couple turns the keys over to the building's new owner. They stopped accepting cleaning and repair jobs some time ago. Al has all ran his last load of dry cleaning on June 11th, and they want all the pants and coats and gowns and shirts picked up as soon as possible. They've done their best to reach out to people who need to pick up their cleaning. It's not exactly an easy process. Quote, sometimes the phone's disconnected, or I wrote the number wrong, or they told me the wrong number. I found some on Facebook, Carol said. Scores of garments remain hanging throughout the shop, and they don't expect all of them to be claimed and paid for before they close. They once held onto a coat for 7 years before the customer came back for it. This time around, they're not going to wait 7 years for the last of the garments to be picked up. Quote, we've got stuff here, 3 years old, 4 years old, Al Levine, 76, said over the loud hum of a box fan on a recent Saturday morning. The couple have sold their building, which dates to 1930, to an unnamed buyer. Quote, what they're going to do with it, I don't know, Al said. I wouldn't be surprised if they tear it down, Carol added. Besides waiting for everyone to come in to pay for and haul away their cleaning, Al has kept himself occupied finding a new home for his front window cactuses, one of them about the height of a grown man, and some of the special other things they don't have room for at home, like his homemade wooden picture frames. There's also a lot of garbage they have to part ways with, like boxes of denim scraps. Levine Cleaners has operated in the same brick building along Dakota Avenue since 1951, when Al's parents, Ed Levine and his wife, Ada, set up shop there. Al was about 7 years old when the store opened. Ed Levine, a native of Missouri who moved to Sioux City in 1934 and then to South Sioux City in 1938, got his start in the dry cleaning business probably in the late 1930s or early 1940s, Al said. He wasn't entirely sure of the date because he wasn't born yet. As the story goes, Ed Levine marched into the Cusack Bauman Laundry and Dry Cleaning Shop on Pearl Street sometime before the war and asked for a job. He was told that without any experience, the shop had no use for him. Quote, and my dad started walking away. He turns around and says, how in the hell do you get experience? Al Levine said. And the guy says, quote, you want to work, don't you? So Ed Levine started working in Cusack's laundry. Sometime thereafter, he went to work for another dry cleaner in the area where West 7th Street becomes Villa Avenue. Later, Ed Levine bought equipment and operated his own shop in South Sioux City, which he operated until his death in 1968. At age 57, Ada died the following year at 59. Al, who grew up in the business, took over the shop after his parents were gone. Carol started working there in 1972 because she said they couldn't keep a counter person. Long recession for dry cleaners. As it would happen, Al and Carol taking over the shop coincided with the beginning of a decades-long slump in the dry cleaning business. At one time, they said there were 12 or 15 dry cleaners in Metro Sioux City. After the Levines closed, there will be no dry cleaning cleaners in South Sioux City and only two left in Sioux City, the Davenport Cleaners on Pierce Street and the Bush Cleaners on Morningside Avenue. Alpine points the beginning of the dry cleaning decline to 1969. At that time, synthetic fabrics like polyester were beginning to replace traditional materials like wool, silk, linen, and rayon, and that had been the basis for men's suits and coats and women's dresses for centuries, excluding rayon, which wasn't widely used until the 1910s. These traditional fabrics, while they each have their own strengths, often fared poorly in the washing machine and were thus a significant part of the backbone of the dry cleaning trade. There was less reason to take polyester or cotton to be dry cleaned unless the garment was uncommonly expensive or special in some way. Quote, it's been kind of a steady downhill since, Al said. Many of their older customers who had known Ed Levine and who were in the habit of having their clothes dry cleaned have died. The industry's decline was accelerated by the turn towards increasingly relaxed and formal clothing that can be readily laundered at home. Quote, I'm not in the business of doing birthday suits, Al joked. The shop in modern times was sustained by, among other things, these expensive holy jeans that people buy coming in for cleaning, Al said, and sundry and other special items like show choir dresses. Al's self-taught skill at patching and repairing garments also helped. He wasn't above repairing the unintended holes and rips in an old, inexpensive, even slightly stained pair of blue jeans. One revenue stream the Levines declined to take advantage of was the apartment space in the building's upper floor. It had been rented out years ago, but Al decided he didn't like the landlord business, so it was closed and sealed off. The pandemic made the dry cleaner's lot even worse because, for months on end, many people had no need to wear neckties, suits, or other dress wear that required dry cleaning. Quote, they were working at home, so they were wearing shorts and t-shirts, Carol said. Still, the Levines were able to eke out a living from the store. Up until the end, Al was still using the very old Hubaugh and Solvic machines purchased by Ed Levine in about 1965. Al had his own special dry cleaning techniques, or perhaps recipe, involving solvent, mineral products, and carbon black. The shop didn't use a perchloroethane, a dry cleaning solvent commonly known as perch, that has been suspected of causing cancer in dry cleaning workers exposed to it constantly. The teal-colored machines, though still functional, were falling into a state of disrepair, with only Al himself being familiar with them to keep them humming. Quote, I'm the only one that can probably run it because it's old and some of the parts aren't working, so I have to do it manually, he said. So that is the story of Levine Cleaners of South Sioux City, and I wish them well in retirement. So I myself have had some clothes of mine cleaned at their business. All right, as we continue through the journal, the business section, headline, Briarcliff's Media Program Among Nation's Best. Briarcliff University's Media Communications Program was ranked 17th in the nation by the Bachelor's Degree Center. The Bachelor's Degree Center is an organization that aims to help students find programs best suited for them. The Bachelor's Degree Center creates its rankings by researching on-campus digital communications programs from accredited, reputable institutions, according to a press release from Briarcliff. Quote, I am very pleased for our alumni, our faculty, present and previous, and our current students, Michael Crowley, chair of the Media Communications Department at Briarcliff, said in the press release. All right, we'll now turn to the Section D, the Living section of today's Sunday paper. Headline, Fifth Graders and Their Hands-on Learning. Subheadline, Camp Invention Gives Sioux City Kids a Head Start in Science. From Sioux City, donning a jaunty bow tie and soaking in some rays, London Grice Jr. was happily chirping away in the backyard of Leeds Elementary School on a sunny Wednesday morning. In case you're wondering, London Grice Jr. was a solar-powered cricket, assembled by and named after fifth grader London Grice. Quote, I like the way the crickets chirp, London, the student explained. Quote, it's soothing. However, teacher Susan Tillo wasn't quite so enamored by noisy insects, either real or solar-operated. Quote, crickets kind of creep me out, she admitted with a shudder. Despite that, Tillo had no qualms about teaching a week-long course on crickets as part of a camp invention class. Students attending summer school in the Sioux City Community School District are being allowed to stretch their wings while advancing their knowledge in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, often abbreviated as STEM, S-T-E-M, through Camp Invention. Funded through the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund, to help kids close the learning gap lost to from COVID-19, Camp Invention provides unique ways to explore, create, and experiment outside the traditional summer school curriculum. Quote, during a pandemic year, students had to miss out on some valuable classroom time, Elementary Education Director Brian Burnright said. Camp Invention will help them make up for what was lost during the school year. For instance, students spent the first part of the morning-only class concentrating on math and writing. The rest of the time was devoted to hands-on activities like assembling tiny, chirpy members of the insect world. Quote, not only do the kids build crickets, but they learn what they eat, who their predators are, and what makes them chirp, Tillo said. Okay, so how does a cricket produce its distinctive sound? Quote, crickets make the chirping sounds when they rub their wings together, London answered as his namesake cricket chirped away. In addition, Camp Invention students learned about solar energy as part of a class time science component, practiced writing by producing reports, and even created art by designing cardboard houses for their long-intended homies. Quote, we try to incorporate many aspects as possible in each unit, Burnright said, of the four-week camp. This week, students learned about crickets. Last week, they reverse-engineered a microphone. Well, next week, they'll learn something new. The hope, according to Tello, is to recreate a learning environment that can also be fun. Quote, when students are given hands-on tasks, they have a better understanding of the subject, she said. Quote, such experiences were lost because of COVID. Briston Sturgis said she is sometimes tired at the start of the school day, but she's wide awake by the time science portion comes along. Quote, this is my favorite time of the school day, Briston said. We get to have fun and do different stuff. Briston's classmate Yami Avacito Roman agreed. Quote, I like decorating my crickets box of stickers, and I like the way crickets jump when they chirp, Yami said. Asked if she likes solar-powered crickets over the real ones, Yami said she preferred the former to the latter. Quote, the one I made is better, Yami said. I get to take my cricket home when the class is over. All right, here's another short story from the Living section. Museum to present open house, walking tour. A Pierce Mansion open house and Jackson Street walking tour on Thursday will highlight one of Sioux City's most historic residential neighborhoods. The public is invited to attend both or either of the free activities. Presented by the Sioux City Public Museum, The event is the first public open house for the historic mansion since the pandemic started. From 5 to 6:30 p.m. Thursday, the Pierce Mansion open house will showcase the distinctive Richardsonian Romanesque structure. Built by John Pierce, the Victorian-era mansion was part of his extensive real estate development on Sioux City's north side. Pierce was instrumental in grading the hills and developing a cable line, which ran the full length of Jackson Street all the way to 40th Street. Protective mask face coverings are encouraged for those who have now received the COVID-19 vaccination. Departing from the Pierce Mansion at 6:30 p.m., the 75-minute Jackson Street walking tour will proceed at a leisurely pace along a half mile of the neighborhood. Tom Munson, Archives Manager, will discuss the street's history, residents, and architecture. Concluding the museum's spring and summer walking tour series is the historic 4th Street walking tour on July 8th. Departing at 6:30 p.m. from the park at the corner of 4th and Virginia Streets, the tour will revisit the storied history of the area, containing the best concentration of late 19th century commercial buildings in Sioux City. For more information, call 712-279-6174 or visit siouxcitymuseum.org/walking-tours. All right, let's close now with the Dear Abby column. It's always a different light to take from the hard news sometimes. Headline, wife fears family visits after mother-in-law's passing. Dear Abby, I have been married for 40 years. My beloved mother-in-law passed away 2 years ago. She has always been my buffer against the rest of my husband's family, two brothers and their families, and his stepfather, none of whom care for me. When we would visit from out of state, I could be sure that my mother-in-law's side, I would be comfortable and loved, while my husband hung out with his brothers and nieces. After she passed, some things happened that hurt me, and I must now decide whether to accompany my husband when he goes to visit. I know if I do, I'll be left alone and isolated on a couch while the rest of them socialize elsewhere, and I dread the thought. My husband doesn't seem to understand how much I am fearing this. Please advise. Signed, Missing My Mother-in-Law. Dear Missing, unless your husband is an ostrich with his head in the ground, surely he must have noticed how his siblings and their families have treated you for the past 40 years. If it has escaped him, give him chapter and verse. No law says you, quote, must accompany him on these visits, and frankly, I see no reason why you shouldn't plan some pleasant activities for yourself in his absence. Try it. You might find you like it. Dear Abby, several years ago, my daughter and her hubby were a young family with two boys, they gave me a large wall clock with sound, lighting, and a wooded background with deer. It was a well-thought-out gift, as I was a bow deer hunter. I loved it, and I'm sure they didn't need to be spending money for a Christmas present from me. My problem is that we have since retired and moved. I no longer have a place to hang the clock, and it no longer goes with my decor. I don't want to hurt her feelings, and it hurts me to think about getting rid of it. Would it be tacky to ask her if she would like it back, explaining my reasoning? An alternative would be to offer it to her sister, who also lives in Florida now. If I were to do this, should I tell my gift-giving daughter? Signed, Grateful Mom in Florida. Dear Mom, when your daughter comes to visit, she will notice the clock is missing. Talk to her. Explain that since you have relocated, you no longer have room for the beautiful clock she gave you, and ask what she would like you to do with it, including offering it to her sister, who might enjoy it as you did. There will be less guilt for you and fewer hurt feelings for your daughter if you keep everything open and above board. Dear readers, I want to wish a happy Father's Day to fathers everywhere, birth fathers, stepfathers, adoptive and foster fathers, grandfathers, and all those caring men who mentor children and fill the role of absent dads. P.S. and a big shout out to dual role moms. I applaud you all today and every day. Signed, Love, Abby. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Janine Phillips, who was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. You can contact Dear Abby at dearabby.com or write her at P.O. Box 69440 in Los Angeles, California. All right, well, that ends up our time together for Iris. So let's just do a quick recap of the weather before we say goodbye. Again today, it'll have a thunderstorm, windy in the afternoon. We're looking at a high of 83 degrees. Tonight, it'll cool down to 55, breezy early, partly cloudy. Monday, it'll be cooler with sun and clouds, high of 73, low of 51. Tuesday, it'll be nice with partial sunshine, high of 79, low of 60. Wednesday, warmer, severe thunderstorms at night, high of 90, low of 69. Thursday, high of 94, low of 65. Again, that brings us to the end for the Sunday, June 20th. 21 edition of the Sioux City Journal for Iris. My name is Trevor. I'm pleased to bring you that paper today. Happy Father's Day and take care, everyone. Bye-bye.